When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yourself along with us at the start.
Yeah, so we'll say our names and then you just say yours as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
are you nervous?
If it's too much, we can introduce you, I guess.
Whoa. Well, now it feels like I'm part of the team. So that's the note. That's thank you guys.
Well, that's what we wanted.
All right.
All right, let's do it. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Spooked, the Scary Story Improvised Podcast. I'm Damian Debring.
I'm Cody Crane.
And I'm Eric Andrews.
There he is.
How's it going, Eric?
Yeah, things are going great, guys, I think. I could be lying, though. I don't know. I tried to abolish how's it going from my whole vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I just want to get right to the dirt, you know? I want to dive right in. I don't even want to ask you how you're doing. I want to know what you're most afraid of.
Right.
Oh, you're looking for the scoops.
You want to know what we're most afraid of right now?
Immediately. Like, okay. I just want to get into it.
Okay. Cody, go.
Most afraid of probably children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you got that one, too?
Yeah. Damien, what do you got?
Bugs. Hate them.
Damn. Yeah, that's on my list, too. Recently, I wrote a whole list of things I'm afraid of, and those are both on it.
Why were you writing a list of things that you were afraid of?
Sometimes I feel like you got to know what you're afraid of.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is
that's true.
I know it sounded like there was going to be more to that.
No, yeah.
What else is on the list? Did you have it with you? Or?
Yeah, I can pull it up.
Okay, well, I'm just saying that I'm also worried that people are going to use this list against you, you know? There's some really, bad people out there, right?
Okay.
This could be like Batman putting out all his weaknesses, you know?
All right, here's some of my fears. Extreme heights. Being alone. Writing my dad back. Causing a death. Drowning.
Yeah.
Seeing a ghost. Home invasions.
I mean, some of these things, I mean, our guest today might be able to help you with.
Corporate gigs.
Might be able to help you with that, too. I don't know. But we have today, we have parapsychologist, we have Jean-Pierre Gignoli here.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
I will not answer that.
Well, the good thing was it wasn't for you, so
it was a general.
Jean-Pierre, what are you afraid of?
What am I afraid of? I think if anything, it'd be not accomplishing like my career goals or dreams. I think that'd probably be a fear.
That's on my list.
That's fair.
You have a lot of career goals, though, Jean-Pierre. Like, you are a rapper, you're an actor, you're a parapsychologist. Like, you do everything.
Yep.
So you have such a big list of goals here.
Yeah, I definitely do. Yeah, I do. You got to dream big and go big in life, and I'm definitely doing that.
That's true.
Well, as you know, we're a scary story podcast, and we brought you here because we want to talk about the rap career. That's number one for us.
Sounds good to me.
But you heard Eric's list of fears here. Do you think that like you would be able to give insight on any of those? Like, obviously the ghosts, but like corporate gigs?
I mean, is there any specific thing on corporate gigs that you're concerned with?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've done many corporate gigs, you know, either with paranormal or rapping, but it just doesn't feel like the audience you want to be doing it for.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I've DJed corporate gigs and stuff, because I'm a DJ as well. So, I mean, that's probably the only real experience corporate-wise that at least I've, like, performed, I guess you could say, or been involved with on that kind of level. But, I mean, yeah, it definitely is a different audience. I guess it just depends on what you're going to be presenting to them or what your involvement with the corporate gig is. That'll kind of determine how the audience will react or how that, you know.
I just want people to love me without even thinking about it.
That's a difficult thing, I think, for human beings to do, it seems like, especially with the current state of the world. So
maybe if you handed out $5 bills before the show.
I've tried that.
The best way I've learned, at least through my life and my challenges and everything, is don't worry so much what people think about you. Worry about what you think about yourself. Like that is probably the best advice I can give.
Yeah. That's pretty good advice. I did do a show where people paid $5 to see the show, and then I gave them $5 in quarters. And I said, anytime you laugh, you got to put a quarter in the bucket. And some people left before the show was ended. So I didn't make my money back.
You're basically a change machine.
Yeah.
Even just the effort to go and get that many quarters.
They're heavy.
They are.
Yeah. Yeah, it already seems like you put way more effort than anybody else put into that, so.
I mean, good for you for having that kind of motivation to do it. It's just maybe not the best way to do it.
I just thought it was a funny idea, you know, but it became very distracting to hear the quarter dropped into the bucket. It wasn't. Maybe it'd be better in America if I had, the $1 bills. They're a little bit quieter.
Right. That's true.
Yeah, maybe. But,
Jean-Pierre, you've done comedy in America too, so maybe you can. Have you ever done anything where people slip $1 bills towards you while you're doing your comedy?
No, that sounds more akin to a strip club than stand-up comedy. But
Eric, you could be a stripper comic.
Come on, guys.
Hey, yeah, that now there's a great idea right there.
I think you just added a new fear for Eric.
You're right. Comedy stripping.
Here's something that relates to my fear list with that. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of opening gifts in front of people.
Oh, I have that one too, actually.
Yeah, I can understand that.
You understand?
Yeah.
So I don't want to open my self, mm-hmm. aka my clothes,
right,
in front of people.
Oh, because you're saying that you're a gift.
Yeah.
Is it that you're worried it's your reaction is going to disappoint them? Or
yes. Yeah. Totally. I'm so worried that like my reaction isn't gonna meet their standards.
Right.
Well, Jean-Pierre, let me ask you this. We've had Eric on before, and he's always wanted to see a ghost. That's on his list of things that he wants to do, even though he's scared of them. Have you personally seen a ghost? You're in the paranormal business, but have you like physically seen one?
Yes, that's what got my interest started in the paranormal. I had an experience when I was very little, like when I was 2 years old, and that was kind of the leap off point. And I've seen many more throughout my years of investigating and just living life. So I definitely have. It's definitely something I've experienced.
Oh, crazy. I can't even remember anything before 5
p.m.
Yeah, most people are pretty impressed. I thought I was actually older when it happened, but my family, when I would talk about it, said, "Now you weren't 5 when that happened. You were like 2 years old. How do you remember all that?" I was like, "I don't know. I just remember it. It's very vivid in my mind."
Do you have a really great memory?
For certain things, I think you touched on it earlier, because I do so many things. Sometimes stuff does fall through the cracks because I'm so life can be chaotic at times, but for the most part, I have a really good memory.
Now, when you say you've seen many ghosts, what exactly do you mean by that? Like, what sort of ghost was it? Like, what sort of experience was it?
Yeah, definitely. I'll break that down, because there are different types of ways that ghosts can manifest into different, you know, shapes, forms, and ways we see them. So, like, my first experience, I was 2 years old, stayed in my grandmother's house, which was a common occurrence, so it wasn't weird or different, but what happened was weird and different. So I was sleeping in the room that my grandfather actually passed away in when I was 3 months old. You know, didn't think much of it. Like I said, I was a little kid, but I woke up in the early morning hours and I saw him in a wheelchair sitting in front of my bed trying to talk to me, and it freaked me out. I didn't know what was going on. I kind of recognized him from photos, but I didn't remember him personally. And it seemed like when he realized that he scared me, he took off out of the room and like disappeared through the dining room wall. And what he looked like, he was transparent, kind of glowing, whitish a color, but transparent, you could see through him. And yeah, I just kind of watched him disappear through the dining room wall and freaked out. There were other times I've seen, like, you know, in my peripheral, like black figures walking or moving. I've seen, like, you know, black shadow figures, like right in front of me or like, you know, closer to me, directly in my view. You know, we've seen like mists, like little mists that don't even look like, you know, don't have really human shapes or forms. But, you know, they move and act weird. It doesn't seem normal when there's no smoke around or anything like that. So there's been lots of different experiences and different types. There's times where I swore I saw a real person standing, you know, in a spot and there was nobody there. So there's kind of different forms that these spirits can take sometimes, or manifest differently for you.
How did you feel like that changed you?
So on a personal level, because I was very young, my grandmother and my mom didn't want to scare me with this stuff. So they acted like it was just a bad dream, or I was imagining it. So I was about 8 years after that, that I had to deal with this stuff by myself. So I would see things quite often, just whether I was going somewhere or at home, wherever. And I didn't say anything because I figured if my family didn't believe me, who else is going to believe me? And then about 8 years later, they sat me down and they said, hey, look, we didn't want to scare you. You were very little, but our family's kind of sensitive to this stuff. My grandmother, before she came here from Italy, saw a lot of ghosts and spirits and dealt with that stuff in Italy. My mom grew up here and saw a lot of stuff. So it really made me interested. So I was very introverted about it when I was young. But then once my family spoke to me openly, I just got really interested. It piqued my curiosity to like crazy levels where I, you know, there wasn't a lot of TV shows back then. It wasn't like hype like it is now in the media. So, you know, I'd ask my parents to buy me books. And, you know, if there was a few TV shows like X-Files or Sightings or Unsolved Mysteries that talked about paranormal stuff, I was really interested in it. And just read a lot of books and ghost stories and scary tales and things like that, because I was really interested in what it was about. So it really just piqued my curiosity and I wanted to learn more about it.
Do you still like scary movies and books and things like that?
I definitely do, but I think I view them a little different when you experience it in real life. And then some of the exaggerations that Hollywood goes through kind of turns you off a little bit, because when they base a lot of these movies, like big ones, on true stories, I'm familiar with a lot of those actual cases that they're based on. So it's like, well, that didn't happen. That's not even part of what happened. So sometimes it kind of does turn you off a little bit when you know the actual case files of some of these bigger paranormal phenomena that happen, and they adapt them into movies.
Right.
But overall, I think it's interesting. And I usually am way more interested in the psychological movies that aren't so much gory and bloody, but they deal more with the human mind and our behavior and how we react to these things, and watching that kind of almost your human behavior evolve when you're dealing with something crazy. I really enjoy that aspect of it, when it's scary on a psychological level.
Well, now you act as well, right?
Yes.
So if you were to create a scary movie, how would you do it differently to make it more scary for, you know, people in your circumstance where you've experienced this kind of thing?
Yeah, I think I would. It's hard to describe, but in some ways, I was really inspired to do this somewhat by the movie Ghostbusters. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. My mom went to see it when she was pregnant with me, like a week before I was born. So I joke I was a fan of it from the womb. And the weird thing about it is Dan Aykroyd's great grandfather was actually one of the pioneers in the field of parapsychology and studied it. So he used like all the terminology used in the movie Ghostbusters is real terminology, ectoplasm, anomalous vapors, things of that nature. They exist as terminology in the paranormal field. So I think I would try and use a lot of real terminology, but I think I'd gear it more to the way I like to watch horror movies, which is, like I said, more of a psychological aspect to it rather than going for the gory jump scare type of stuff. I would rather focus more on the psychological aspects of what it can do to you to deal with like crazy stuff that happens.
What is that psychological? I'm like, it's my dream to see a ghost. It's my fear as well. What is that psychological thing that you go through?
On a very basic level, it's fear of the unknown. I think even someone like me who studied this stuff for years and been so involved with it, we basically have a bunch of theories about what it is, and we don't have real concrete, like hardcore scientific evidence to prove it, to the people who don't believe it. So I think it's just expounding upon that and showing that, like, the human fear of the unknown is a very powerful part of being a human being. So if you can pull on those natural fears that we all have, you can really get into people's heads. So I think really doing that, taking that fear of the unknown, because like an example would be like if you want to talk Hollywood, like Jaws was originally supposed to have the shark throughout the whole movie, but because it was they had so many problems with it, they ended up making it more of a psychological thriller where you don't see the shark, but you see what the shark does. You see that there's blood, you see that there's an attack, but you don't see the actual shark itself until way later in the movie. So I think something like that works very well.
Like a lot of characters being like, what's happening? And someone going, I don't know.
Well, I think there's a thing.
Creating that chaos and that fear of the unknown is really easy to do because human beings are naturally like that. So
there's been a few things where I've seen a lot of people say that the ideas that you're going to create in your own head are going to be much scarier than anything they're going to be able to show you.
100%.
And that makes me think of one. I think it was The Descent. Where they're like all this cave diving, and throughout the whole movie, you never see what's happening, and that's what makes it so scary. But as soon as they actually show what the monsters are, I was completely out. They looked so terrible, and it almost ruined the movie for me. So something that I thought was such a really like amazing setup to it, where it was tense and it was psychological and it was scary, but as soon as you actually kind of give it form, it almost takes away from that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And I think one way to curb that kind of thing is to something like simple like Scooby-Doo does. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They always pull the mask off of Mr. Johnson, who was doing it the whole time. And I think that is a way to kind of curb that disappointment, because that most people's biggest fear is other human beings. So, I mean, the fact that you can take that monster that you built up the fear the whole time in someone with, and then you flip it and say, oh, it was just the neighbor messing with you. Like, I think that's more of a reaction that'll keep you in the story, that you won't be disappointed by, maybe the way the monster looks, because the monster is us. And I think that's always something that is big, that really works well with people reacting positively to the reveal of the monster.
Have you ever been a monster?
I have not necessarily legitimately a monster, but I work Halloween events here in Southern California. So I worked at Not Scary Farm as a monster. I was a zombie. I was a clown. I did a bunch of different stuff there. I currently work at Queen Mary's Dark Harbor, one of the most haunted ships in California. So I love it there anyway. And I was born in Long Beach. I'm actually one of the main characters for the event. I do their commercials. I'm on merchandise and stuff like that. I've definitely have a lot of experience actually jumping out and scaring people and doing stuff like that. So yes, I have been a monster many times.
You love horror.
I really do. Yeah, it's a big part of my life. Halloween is my favorite holiday ever.
Now, I don't know if this is stepping away from what we're talking about or not, but how do you decorate your house?
To be honest, I'm not big on decorating. My wife does, and right now we're kind of in transition. She's actually going to college in Northern California, and I'm living with my in-laws while we're looking for a place up there. But when we had our own place, my wife loved to put like skulls and kind of dark stuff around the house and creepy lanterns and things like that, and I was totally cool with it. I love that. That kind of feng shui, that darkness that she built up in the house. So I'm definitely down to kind of build up that dark side a little more.
I was curious if you ever like to just step away from it, but it seems like you are fully immersed always.
Yes, definitely. I mean, and to take it a step further, even with my the other stuff I do, it all intertwines. I'm currently working on a rap album that's all about the paranormal. I'm rapping about ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, whatever, all that stuff. That's my big project in the works. So it really does, like, it is a huge part of my life where it infects even my stand-up comedy jokes. I have tons of jokes about the paranormal and ghostly things. So
a lot of knock-knock, who's there?
No, definitely not.
Nobody.
controversial than that.
To go back to you being a kid seeing these ghosts, have you been seeing ghosts like your whole life? Like, when was the most recent time that you've seen one?
Let's think. Obviously, I've been stuck in quarantine like most people,
right.
And they're pretty strict in California right now, too. And also, I'm diabetic, so I'm trying to be cautious with this whole thing as well, because supposedly I'm high risk.
Yeah.
Let me think the last time I experienced something like that. Honestly, I don't have a super recent time, I think, that I've experienced something necessarily paranormal recently, to be honest. I can't think off the top of my head. In the last 2 years, I've been kind of a homebody. I've been working on a lot of personal projects. Haven't been doing a lot of investigating of the paranormal, although I've been consulting with clients. I think the one thing that sticks out is a lady who I actually am going to be in contact with today. She sent us a video. At her workplace, something physically grabbed her and pulled her to the ground. And after analyzing the video and looking at it, like, there's no way it could have been her passing out or anything like that. So I know seeing that and, you know, really analyzing it and taking a good look, like, that wasn't normal. So I think that really stood out to me. And that's probably the most recent thing is that the footage she sent from her workplace where something literally, like, took her from the top of her body and just pulled her to the ground where she was knocked unconscious. Like, it was very serious. And there was no way that, like, she collapsed or anything like that.
That's funny that you brought up Jaws, because that's exactly what happens in the beginning.
Yeah. Except in the water.
Yeah. Well, maybe she worked at a pool.
Right?
So you have a team that does these investigations, and I was reading on your website too. You don't charge any money for this. You guys like to do this for fun, right? This whole team?
Yeah, we're actually a 501c3 nonprofit. So we don't charge for our services. A lot of our clients will give us donations, and we get donations from other places sometimes as well. So that's usually how we take care of expenses if we're traveling or doing things. So yeah, we're officially a nonprofit. We really want to try and help people out, because even today, with how open media and our culture is about the paranormal, there's still a lot of people that think it's taboo, that'll brush it off, that'll tell people, oh, you're just imagining things. And most people just want validation that they're not crazy. And you have someone like me and my team come in, we spend time with them, we talk with them, we get to know them, and then we try and capture the claims of their evidence or experience it, and they feel relieved just to have someone who will listen to them seriously about this kind of stuff.
We have one of those people on the podcast over here, Damien.
Hey, how's it going?
He's denying it. he doesn't believe in any of this.
No, I don't.
Eric and I are believers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. What I tell people all the time, it's very much an experiential type of thing. You need to experience it to really, I think, grasp it and understand it. And when you haven't, I think it's hard to. And I totally get that, because I studied a lot of psychology and human behavior and the way the mind works. And I think if I had never experienced it, I'd probably be a skeptic too. And the way my team approaches it is actually we're all skeptical believers on our team, because if you go in thinking automatically it's something paranormal, you're doing a disservice to the people you're trying to help. So we really use the scientific method and test everything out that we can before we determine it's something that's not normal.
I would also argue, though, even if I did experience something, I would think that the last thing I would ever think it to be would be something paranormal.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely true. And I hear that from lots of people. I definitely completely understand. Because I've dealt with families that dealt with paranormal activity. And like one, say like the husband or the wife didn't experience it. Even when they saw crazy stuff like objects fly across the room, they found a way to excuse that kind of thing, even though there's no possible way you could excuse certain types of things. So, yeah, when we get stuck in our mindset sometimes and we're not open up to other things. And that's one of the human flaws we have.
Yeah. On this podcast, we call that Damien.
Thank you.
but for the folks at home, I don't think we mentioned this. You said that you were you do like a scientific method behind it, but you have a PhD in this parapsychology. So you're an official ghost doctor.
In some ways, I guess you could say that. it's psychology in different terms. You just think of human behavior and you think of the things that aren't normal for most people, and you delve into those a little more, even though, you know, there's obviously only a certain amount of distance you can go with it. Definitely. I've studied a lot of things and looked into a lot of things that are, you know, out of the bounds of normal reason. So
I didn't even know that was like a thing. How do you find out about like that?
So funny enough, I'll go back to a story I told earlier about Ghostbusters. It's my favorite movie of all time. And I always heard Peter Venkman, Bill Murray's character, say, oh, I have my PhD in psychology and parapsychology. And I was like, wait, what's that degree? And I started looking it up even though I was really young, in like the early days of the internet, because a little older. and you didn't find a lot, but there were quite a few actually prestigious colleges that offered parapsychology programs. I originally wanted USC offered a program, and since I'm in Los Angeles, I really wanted to go to USC to study parapsychology there, but by the time I graduated high school, the program was gone. It doesn't get a lot of funding. It doesn't get a lot of attention, so I think a lot of colleges have dropped it. I think there's less than a handful of colleges now that actually offer that program, but a lot of study is done on the psychology, human behavior type of study, and then the rest is more extrasensory perception, different ways of thinking about the human mind and how it works. And the fact that we only understand a very small percentage of the human brain and mind and how it works, and, you know, expanding that some people tap into those other areas of the human mind that most people just don't.
Yeah, I love psychology very much. I've never been good at it academically throughout my whole life. I've probably totaled a 13% grade in all the psychology classes I've taken. Yeah. So I'm not good at it, but I like it, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a pretty big fan. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, yeah. Is there this thing where, I feel like you might know because you're in psychology, where certain people believe that they have like a special power? I was like, I read something about it one time and I was like, oh, I'm one of those people that I think I have a power, like a special power.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I totally get what you're saying. I definitely have heard that before. I'm more along my belief and my theory on that is I believe all human beings are capable of these extraordinary feats that sometimes normal lay people call, whether it's extrasensory perception, being psychic, quote unquote. An example would be like when, you know, say a car flips over and your child's stuck under a car. There's been instances, and this is recorded, that the mother or the family member was able to lift the car to get the child from under the car by themselves. And I think these phenomena are part of us. We just don't tap into it as much. So I think everybody is capable of having these special abilities, but I think it's how our minds work. You see, children seem to be very perceptive and susceptible to experiencing more of this paranormal stuff because their minds aren't as clouded with life. But as you grow in our society and our culture, you have, you know, education teaching you one thing, you have religion teaching you another, and like our vision and our thoughts and our way of thinking are very tunnel visioned, and we don't expand our minds to be open to other things. And I think that's what causes people to not tap into being special or having those special abilities. But I think we're all capable of it. It just depends on where our mind's at and how we look at it.
Eric, I need to know what your power is.
Yeah, what is your power?
Well, I think I'm like 50% psychic. And like, usually I can get things pretty close. I don't necessarily nail it every time, but I feel like I get this instinct. Maybe it's just instinct, but it feels more special than that.
Yeah.
Do you have an example?
Yes.
Okay.
Care to share it with the class?
All right. We're listening.
I'm trying to think of how to demonstrate this. Oh, boy. No, I can't figure out how to do it.
Well, you can just give an example. You don't need to. We're not putting you on the spot. Like, do it now. Tell me what number I'm thinking of.
No. We're more just curious why you believe this.
You know what I really think it's from? If I were to like really brass tacks it down. Mm-hmm. Is that a saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. Something like that.
Getting down to brass tacks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You all agreed, but okay. I just seeing that none of you actually knew.
I don't know if it quite fit. I've never heard it.
Yeah, I've heard getting down to brass tacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting down to brass tacks is usually how it's said.
What's that mean?
It's like cutting away at everything, getting straight to the point, you know?
Okay, well, this was the worst way to get down to brass tacks. but there's a part of me that I feel like I was lied to a lot as a child. So I'm really sensitive to people who are tricking me or lying, and I feel like I can see past that.
Mm, okay.
So I don't know if that's a power or it's just a perception that I've built up. Through time.
It seems to me, as the skeptic, that you've grown up around people who are lying to you so much that you could recognize those tells, those things that when people are lying to you, you notice those little things, those little subconscious things that, you know, a lot of people will notice in some instances, but not all the time.
Well, so, the show Lie to Me.
Yeah, it's definitely a behavioral thing that I think that you're more attuned to because you've been so experienced with it.
Yeah,
true, but I also feel like I can't really do it over this technology stuff. I feel like I've got to be in the presence of somebody. Well,
of course, because you're picking up on a lot of nonverbal cues that when people are lying.
I believe you're telling the truth.
This is how a lot of psychics and people who read people, quote unquote, do it, is they use a lot of these verbal nonverbal cues, and you know, they suggest things to people, and then that's how they pull out their answers, and it makes it seem like they're doing something, you know, a lot more impressive than it actually is, but it's really just being able to read people.
So you believe I'm one of these psychics?
No, I believe that you're just more attuned to when people are lying.
It's a skill in its own right.
I think it's a skill. I think it is something that you can work towards and get better at doing, but I don't think it is a psychic ability.
All right, think of a number.
Okay, between anything or just any number?
Between 1 and 3.
Okay.
2.
1.5.
It's impossible. There's only one number between 1 and 3.
Oh, I gotcha.
It was a joke. Anyways, getting back on track. Sorry for that.
Hey, well, no, Eric, no. You got to know that I'll never lie to you.
Who's this?
it's Cody. You got to know.
I don't know. I'm not sure yet. Jean-Pierre.
Yeah.
Do you think people with dark hair are more likely to become an investigator in the paranormal?
No, I don't think that that's the case. But I haven't really looked at the numbers, really, to be honest, to tell you if there's any correlation between that and doing the paranormal.
I've just never seen anyone with, you know, light hair, fair hair, doing investigations. So I'm just curious if there's like a certain, you know, call.
Do you think it's because they're only up at night investigating ghosts and they're not out in the sun to make their hair lighter?
Or it could be about the same, like decorating my house dark. Maybe they just, you know, dyed their blonde hair dark because they like the darkness as much as they like the paranormal.
Ooh, what's your natural color?
Mine is brown, so I have dark hair already.
Okay.
Eric, do you feel unrepresented in when you're watching the paranormal shows?
It's just, it's like something I want to do a ghost hunt so bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, we said we'd do one.
Yeah,
we've
wanted to do a few of them, but we'd love to have you come join us.
It's on my bucket list, guys.
And Jean-Pierre, if you're in Canada too, like.
Anytime.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have an expert.
Swing by. We're around Dan Aykroyd, too.
I'd love to. If I'm out that way, I'll definitely get in touch with you guys again. Maybe we can go out together.
Yeah, we can break into Dan Aykroyd's house. He's close by.
Oh, that'd be great. I've met him a couple of times. Maybe he'll remember me.
I'm just looking to get some Crystal Skull vodka. That's all I need.
Well, he promotes that enough. I'm sure he'll sell you some.
That's true. Let me ask you about, because you're perceptive, you're seeing ghosts, you've seen them your whole life. Is there any advice you can give to Eric to, because he really wants to see one, so how can this happen? He needs it.
I mean, the best thing I could offer is keep an open mind to it. And an example I'll give you is my best friend, who's my co-founder of my paranormal team, we met in high school. We investigated for 4 years before he ever saw something. So it took him 4 years, and we were steadily investigating very haunted places, and he never saw anything. And I remember when he saw a full-bodied apparition 4 years into this, and was just like, he ran out of wherever the building was, and like, dude, I saw a ghost finally. So it's something that's not easy to tap into. Like I said, I believe everybody's capable of experiencing it and being more perceptive to the world around them and beyond that. But your mindset, I think, the way you view things and your perception really affects how easily or, you know, how hard it is to see these things. So if you keep an open mind and you find yourself in locations that maybe have reports of activity, like, just keep your eyes out, pay attention. You never know.
The place I live in now, the person who is, I think, two tenants before me, they died in the room I'm in right now. It was my like landlord's brother. He was sick and he died in this room. And my neighbor, they kind of have said that they'll wake up in the middle of the night sometimes and their whole bed would be shaking. And she doesn't think it's her uncle who's doing that, but she believes that somebody's in the house. And there are times where I get scared at night if I'm like still awake around like 3. It just feels different. It feels eerie.
Mm-hmm.
Am I gonna?
Yeah, I mean, it makes
close?
Sense. It's possible. I mean, the thing is, usually why 3 a.m. has such a negative connotation most of the time, especially when it comes to supernatural things. A lot of people refer it to the biblical thing and all that, but really around that time most people are in deep REM sleep, and there's a belief that we expel energy while we're sleeping. You know, if we're working during the day or doing stuff and all that, when you're resting and when you're really in deep REM sleep, you tap into other parts of your brain that you don't usually use when you're in that deep sleep. So that might be, maybe you're feeling the energy expelling, and things are calmer, so sometimes there's more paranormal activity because there's not as much interference with, everything's based on energy. So, you know, these spirits have energy and use energy to manifest, so and there's a lot of energy to pull from at that time because everybody's kind of resting, there's not as many cars moving, there's not as many electronics running, all that kind of stuff that may interfere with that. So you could be close if you do feel something, but also if you really do fear things like you've explained, it could just be your mind being scared because you have that fear.
Yeah, that's how I feel about a lot of the stuff, like you were saying about being open to it. But in its own way, I feel like it's also a way to see stuff that's not there. You're priming your mind to see something and make sense of things before you actually know what these things are. That could be explained in more rational ways.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I say we do the scientific method first. We have a very extensive questionnaire for our clients before we even go and investigate a place, because we want to make sure they're of sound mind, you know, and there's nothing else that's causing their claims to come out. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like we have to really do a mental evaluation on our clients to make sure, because there are plenty of people out there who want attention. I know when we were very young starting to do this, we had girls that just wanted us to come to their house. We're like, we didn't experience anything. And then my friend was like, who was part of my team, was like, I think she just wanted us to come over. I think she likes you or likes one of us or something. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. At least we didn't have to drive too far. But yeah, there could be lots of different reasons why, you know, people claim to experience stuff. Some people just have overactive imaginations. They watch a lot of horror movies and that's what they think.
Can you kind of like go through with say like we were to call you to investigate like our living space or whatnot? Can you kind of go through the steps of when you're with a client, like you mentioned the questionnaire?
Yeah, definitely. So it depends on how they contact us. Sometimes it's by phone. Sometimes it's by email. If it's by email, we'll obviously send them the questions in the email. And it's just a breakdown of, first, we ask them the basic questions about what is going on. What's the activity? When did it start? Has anyone else experienced it? Does it happen at a certain time? So those are some of the basic questions. And then you want to start that way and make it like positive, so you're not acting like off the bat you're questioning their rationale or their logic. And then that's when you start breaking down more stuff. Okay, so you know, have you ever been diagnosed with like bipolar disorder or anything like that? You see a psychiatrist, psychologist, therapist. Has there been any issues in your past on that level? And then, you know, more on the paranormal side, if we determine that those things are all good, at the end we'll ask them like, have you ever messed with like witchcraft or voodoo or Ouija boards or tarot cards or anything of that nature that could, if we think it's real activity, maybe be a source for the real activity. So that's just a quick breakdown. Obviously, it's a little more intricate than that, but I just wanted to give you kind of a broad overview of the questions we might ask a client.
How do you feel about Ouija boards?
Me personally, I won't mess with them. I don't know necessarily if it's the board itself that has like a magical power or anything, but I think us as humans are very powerful, and when we set our minds to something, we can accomplish it. So it's like if you're set your mind to communicating with something from the other side, you may actually get in communication with something from the other side. And when you don't have knowledge of what that is, which I would say probably most human beings don't, you're not going to know how to contain it. If a quote unquote door opens up because of what you did, you won't be able to close that door. Other things could come in, and you're not prepared to handle what there is there. So I personally suggest against it and for people not to mess with it. A very large percentage of our cases, we've discovered that either witchcraft was involved, Ouija boards, tarot cards, those types of things. And then when we go further into people being involved with those things, they usually all say, well, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just messing around. And then all this stuff started happening in our house. So I usually suggest away from it, especially if you're scared of that kind of stuff, because there are, just like in life, there are good and bad people. On the other side, there are good and bad spirits. So you don't know who you're going to be communicating or letting through.
Yeah, because Damien, I know you're big against the Ouija board. Because your whole thing is it's like made by Parker Brothers, right? Or
well, that's not my
or...
whole thing, but that's definitely a knock against it for me.
But I think what you're saying here, Jean-Pierre, is that like even though it is just a game or whatever, and it's like a basic, like it's obviously for people to buy, but it could also like anything could be almost used as a tool for communication if you're trying to.
Everything is about intention. You know what I mean? What's your intention with the tool? You could like write the alphabet and numbers on a piece of paper, and like people have done fake Ouija boards where, you know, they use like, I think they use like pencil, they interlock their fingers and they like circle the words and go around, and you're like, oh, are you moving the pencil? So there's like, you know, kind of the poor man's way of doing a Ouija board. So I think really always intention is what is more powerful than anything when you're doing something.
Do you know what the history of like the Ouija board is? Because I don't personally know where it came across, and it's okay if you don't. But
no, off the top, I really don't know the full history of it. But I know that it was intentionally created during there were really times that the paranormal was a lot more open before it closed off, and religion really caused a lot of the close down of investigating and being interested in psychics and supernatural things. And it was around that time that the Ouija board came into play, because people wanted to communicate somehow, and somebody came up with the idea to create this board to kind of allow what they thought was there to try and communicate in this form. So somebody just came up with the idea to try something different to communicate with the other side.
Now, let me ask you about this, because Damien and I, we're looking for bonus content for this show, and we're thinking about opening a Dybbuk box in the house. Is this a good idea?
I mean, I would suggest against it, but that's really up to you. Again, hey, intention is very important with anything that you do, and if your intention is to get something, they say be careful what you ask for, so...
I mean, personally, I'm not worried about any of it. I'm not worried about a Ouija board. I'm not worried about tarot cards. You want to do them? Let's do them.
Here's my big problem with opening up the Dybbuk box in the house is that if a demon arises, I really don't want it to possess me, because if it possesses me, Damien won't believe that I'm possessed and he'll call for me to get psychiatric help. Whereas if it possesses him, I'll know what to do. Well, I won't know what to do, but I'll have a better idea. I won't give up on him like he'll give up on me and lock me up.
I've just been looking for an excuse. So.
Okay, interesting. Sounds like you guys got something going on there, definitely.
Well, I think it's interesting because I don't know if I believe in the Dybbuk box as well. And I got a question about religion coming up here, too. But like the reason why I'm not believing in the Dybbuk box too much is like you buy them off of like eBay or something, right?
Were they not created by an author in the 80s?
Yeah.
So that's another reason not to believe them.
But the Dybbuk is a creature that is in like
yes, but that's like saying Jewish like mythology, that's right? Like saying like, oh, it's a ghost box. Like, OK,
right.
It doesn't mean anything.
So. My thing is that there's a small percentage to me, even as a believer in ghosts, that the Dybbuk is actually real, and an even smaller percentage that this box that I'm getting off of eBay isn't just bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely. It's hard to say, especially when you're dealing with other people, if you don't know these people. There's plenty of people out there that'll make a buck off of anything they think they can. So, to me, again... There is mythology and legends about the Dybbuk and the box and all that stuff. So it comes from a place of truth at some point in history, whether it was created by somebody or, you know, it was real at one time or whatever. Certain societies maybe thought it was real or it was real to them. So, you know, the truth is in that part of it. The rest, it's on people to decide, I guess, but you never know. I keep my mind open to all possibilities.
Right.
I don't shut down everything unless I have either proof against it or proof for it. I kind of stay in the middle lane where, I want to keep myself open to the possibility of it. And then, you know, when you deal with it directly, that's when you'll find out.
Yeah, well, Damien. Do you follow expiration dates on your milk?
Mostly, yes.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
Also, the expiration dates, they say they're used as a guideline, and you can go a little outside of them.
Oh, so he doesn't follow them.
So
I said mostly.
How far outside do you go from the expiration date on your milk?
When it's bad.
How? So you do it on the day. You're like, this is the day.
No. Like, you do the sniff test, you do the taste test, and if it's off, then it's off.
From the carton or not?
Either or.
Being his roommate, I can testify. I've seen him throw out a lot of bad milk.
Yeah, I don't go through milk that fast.
Yeah, you forget about it. So
I'm not a big milk drinker.
You believe that there can be something bad in a box.
I like that.
See, the thing is with that is I know what is bad about it.
But not until you tasted it.
True. But I know that there's a potential for there to be something bad in it. That's why I taste it.
Eric, would you be willing to open a Dybbuk box in your home?
No. No, thank you.
Well, I didn't want to do it in the house. That was your idea.
Yeah, I'm worried that someone would put something in there that would smell up the house, too, if there's, like, a dead bird in there or something.
I wanted to go the whole nine yards. I was saying, let's do it at midnight in the middle of a graveyard under a full moon. I don't care. Let's do it. And you just wanted to do it in the living room.
Well, yeah, I'd rather it be just haunting us or something than put it out on the world. Isn't that noble of me, Jean-Pierre, that I just want to take it in myself and not give it to the world?
Sure. Let's hope that it stays that way. You can call it noble if you want.
Before I feel like we might be getting close. I'm not sure how long you guys were going, but I just wanted to find out from you potentially what the freakiest thing you've ever encountered or seen or been a part of, you know, because like just like what this podcast is, I want to be spooked. I want to hear something and, you know, feel the chills. And I feel like you've experienced more than I obviously have ever. So I'm daring you to spook me.
Yeah, of course. Definitely.
Okay.
I have quite a few stories, but one I always tell because it really sticks out because it was something that happened to me personally and other people around me with plenty of witnesses to this. We did a case in Bellflower, California. Didn't think much of it. You know, we had a team, went to investigate. Literally, as soon as we got to this property, it was a two-story house in this cul-de-sac. And as soon as we stepped out of the cars at the client's house, a metal chair on the balcony just slid out from under the table in the balcony by itself. Now, we didn't know what it was at first. We just heard the sound. And we literally, the client brought us in the house. We ran upstairs and she said, this is a metal chair. It's pretty heavy. And it just slid by itself. And nobody else was in the house. The client and her son was there with us. So we're like, okay, this is going to be interesting already, because most cases are disappointing. You sit for hours off end. You have thousands of hours of footage and you rarely catch anything. And then stuff does happen sometimes. So that's kind of how it is. So it's exciting when you have that kind of activity off the bat. So anyway, we investigated. We had a few things happen. We're sitting in the living room with the client and my team members. And my team member and her son see a woman in a bloody dress in the restroom from the living room we're sitting in, and they kind of freak out and they're like, we just saw something over there. So, you know, we're investigating, we have camera set up, we have audio, all that stuff to try and use a scientific method to capture this stuff. And in that time frame, the client's sister, who works a job late at night, showed up and she walked by all of us. We heard the door, but we didn't see her, and we were in the dark, but our eyes had already adjusted to the darkness. And everybody got this weird vibe because she didn't say anything to anybody. She just kind of walked in the house and went up to her room. So we're like, okay, whatever. We didn't think much of it. So we left the house. We left our equipment running in the house because sometimes when stuff doesn't happen, we think if we leave and leave our equipment running, maybe something will happen while we're out. So we went down to 7-Eleven to grab some snacks and drinks, keep ourselves up because it was close to 4 in the morning. And we went back to the house or sitting outside the house. It was 4 a.m., and all of a sudden, we start hearing Native American chanting. I probably can't represent it the best myself, but, you know, the traditional Native, but that very loud, sounded like multiple people. It echoed through the entire neighborhood. It was so intense that we literally, half of us jumped in our cars, half of us ran around the block, and we couldn't find a source. It was a weeknight. There was no schools, clubs, or anything nearby to where the house was, so we didn't find any sources. And we come back to the house after doing a quick trip around the neighborhood and couldn't find anything. And we get back in the house, and my wife's a member of the team, and she's not there. So I look at my tech guy who drove his car, and I'm like, hey, did you see Danielle? No, I thought she was with you. So everybody thought she was with the other group. So we run outside the house. We see her drink she had from 7-Eleven sitting in the middle of the street in the cul-de-sac, but she's nowhere to be seen. So we walk out a little further, and we look to the left, and she's at the end of the block, you know, on the sidewalk. So I run up to her. Most of the team runs up to her. Hey, are you okay? Where were you? She's like, I was here the whole time. And we're like, no, it's been like 15 minutes, and we all ran past this exact spot and drove past this spot, and you weren't here. And she's like, oh, you know, she just like played it off. Like, okay, you know, I'm fine. Let's go wrap up this investigation, put stuff away, and like, I'll tell you what happened later. But right now, let's just like start wrapping this up. So we go back in the house. We start breaking down equipment. And I'm on the stairwell, and I'm grabbing one of our infrared cameras off of like wherever I mounted it at. And all of a sudden, I feel like something like huge is going to come at me. It's like coming at me, and I kind of braced because it just felt like, I don't know, like a linebacker was charging at me. And there's this little petite Latina girl coming down the stairs, and I immediately was like, I grabbed one of my team members, and I said, I think she's the source of this. There's a weird energy about her. Like, I don't know what's going on. So my team was like, yeah, I kind of got that vibe too. So we're breaking down equipment. I walk down the stairs. She's sitting on the couch, and her eyes are just, they won't come off of me. She's just staring at me, and that's it. I went behind walls, moved to different parts of the house, and her eyes are still focused on me, and I just like got this creepy vibe about her. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And finally, I had to grab a piece of equipment and put it away in one of my bags that was right next to her on the couch. So I walk over there, put the equipment in the bag, and I catch eyes with her for like maybe 5 or 10 seconds in that time frame. And my chest got super tight. My eyes started watering, and I couldn't breathe. It was the first time I ever ran out of a case. I ran out of that house because I didn't know what was happening, and I felt my life was in danger. So I ran out. As soon as I left the threshold of the house, I could breathe again. My wife chased after me, and she's like, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm all right. I don't want to go back in there, though. You guys finish grabbing the equipment, and, you know, we'll wrap up this case. So we start putting things away. I talk to the client. I tell her, hey, I think your sister might be involved in something. I don't know, but I got a weird vibe off of her. And the client told us this that night after I told her the vibe I got. She said, well, my sister's been messing with witchcraft with her coworkers. They're like stealing each other's combs and hair. And like, we don't know if they're doing it in Spanish. They call it brujería, the witchcraft. And I'm like, oh, dang. Okay. So I'm going to probably guarantee you that that's the source of why this activity is happening. Because there's something very strong here if it caused that to happen to me. Because I've never had something like that happen to me. So we put everything in the cars, and then we walked back to the spot with my wife where she vanished pretty much. And she literally collapsed when she got to that spot she was at. I caught her, and we started pulling her back, and we were like, let's just get out of here. We need to leave. Long story short, went home, slept, woke up the next morning, and I had a circular burn mark on my chest where my chest got tight and I couldn't breathe. My wife's wristwatch was 15 minutes behind the exact amount of time that she disappeared for. And the next day she told me she doesn't remember anything. She was standing on the corner. It got pitch black. And she said like it was like some giant creature or animal was breathing on her face. Like she felt the moisture from the breathing. But she couldn't see anything. She doesn't know what happened. And that was one of the craziest cases because I never have things happen to me like that. And yeah, it was very intense. So that one I definitely will not forget.
Shoot. I feel like you might be in the game too long because you didn't sound freaked at all. you say everything with such a calmness.
Yeah, I think at the time it definitely affected me. It freaked me out because, you know, like I said, I did fear for my safety at that point. That's the only reason I ran out of the house because I feared for my safety. I couldn't breathe. And you can't breathe. That's a bad sign. I think at the time I definitely was a lot more shaken up. But, yeah, I've definitely been in the game a long time, and it takes a lot to get to me. So,
well, yeah, it caused you to leave, right?
So
what was that? Sorry.
It caused you to leave, right? So like that's got to be a big thing for you, because I assume like you don't leave a lot of cases.
Oh yeah, no, we never do, and we still stayed in touch with the client because we had to go over our video and audio evidence and get back in touch with them. So you know, like most people, just to kind of clear up how we work when a client asks us for our services. Most people just want validation that what they're experiencing is not just in their heads or just to them, but they have someone professional come in, evaluate the situation and tell them, hey, I experienced what you experienced, or, you know, we captured some voices or evidence for you. And they just want that validation that they're not crazy. In other cases, they may want help. Some people are very religious and they turn to their religions. They call a priest or a pastor and have them bless the house. Other times, my wife is indigenous, Native American, so we'll do like a sage cleansing of the house and like put protection over the house using sage. In other cases, sometimes we just get in the circle and we kind of do our spiritual thing and we put like a spiritual protection and push whatever's there out to protect the house, to kind of cleanse it of whatever's there. So sometimes those are the cases. I believe in this case, they went to their religion, their church, and asked them for help with it. So.
Wow. I think that's a good way to end the show, though, today. Eric, did that chill you like you wanted?
Not as I wanted. It's only because of his calm demeanor. You know, for some reason, I felt like it was going to be like those stories that you hear, you know.
You wanted him to have PTSD at this movie?
Probably.
I just wanted to hear a little tremble or, you know, but it's definitely freaky. I can imagine it, but it didn't spook me.
Oh, well, there we go.
It's all good. I mean, that's a good thing, too, because it shows that your fear is not that deeply rooted, because most people freak out with that story, even with the way I've told it. I've told it for years, so it's not like, you know, I'm just starting to say it calmly. I pretty much always speak like this. So I think that shows that you're maybe not as fearful as you kind of portray it to be. Maybe you're more fearful of experiencing it than hearing about it.
I think so.
I always knew you were braver than you said you were, Eric.
Well, don't tell too many people.
Oh, that's okay. This is going to be behind the paywall, so.
But on that note, let's do some plugs. Jean-Pierre.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Yeah. So, again, my name is Jean-Pierre Gignoli. You can find me at www.mcpierre.com. That's my music site, but it has links to my paranormal stuff, my comedy stuff, basically all the stuff I do. And then if you want to specifically check out my paranormal stuff, that's www.paranormaldetectives.org. That's paranormaldetectives.org. On social media, my handle is @talented. That's talented with an extra ED. Because I do so many things, I kind of came up with my own name for what I do.
Amazing. And Eric?
Yeah, you can find me on the internet by searching Merrick Mandrews.
Amazing. And we'll be tweeting all of this out at Spooked Podcast. Jean-Pierre, thank you so much for coming on. And I feel like we still have so much to talk about, so we might have to have you back again sometime if you're down for it.
Yeah, stay in touch. Let me know. I would love to come back. It was great talking with you guys.
Well, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And spooked.
Spooked.